Thanks all for coming. I'm very happy to be here. Just as you can see on the slide, I'm suggesting if you want to tweet about this, to use the hashtag social media, which can be fun. You can tweet things like, oh, what bullshit is he now talking about? We need Hegel in order to understand the internet, or Karl Marx invented social media, and things like this, but won't bore you too much with philosophy. So we're talking about this book, Social Media, A Critical Introduction. It's a kind of introduction, how to use critical theory for better understanding social media. There are also associated books. I have written a book about digital labor that is also about social media, but how to use Marx in order to understand it. There's a book that is just forthcoming in October called Occupy Media, about the Occupy movement and social media, and I brought a copy of this one. I think we can pass along these two books. You can have a look at them. That's the Occupy Media book, and you can also have a look at this one. And I edited also some collected volumes like this one, where a lot of contributions are in it about critique and social media. Another one is new, about social media, politics, and the state, concerned especially things like surveillance, protest, and so on. And the follow-up book to this book will be out next year. It's called Culture and Economy in the Age of Social Media, and you see Marx on it, but actually this is my Raymond Williams book. The question, how can we make use of Raymond Williams' cultural materialism for understanding social media? So I'm really interested in how to use critical theory for understanding the media, the internet, and social media. I mean, that's distinctive from my approach. And I mean, to put it in a nutshell, I think critical theory is about a critique of the political economy. It's about a theory of capitalism. It's about a critique of power. It's about a critique of ideology. And it's about a support and analysis of social struggles for alternative to the reality that we have now. So we could play a game, who are these people? Yeah, but these are people who I think have influenced my thought and my works. The first one is Hegel. So Hegel's dialectical philosophy is important for me. Second one is Marx, Marx's theory of capitalism. Rosa Luxemburg and her theory of international relations and imperialism and crisis. Herbert Marcuse, his theory of ideology and consumer society and so on. Dallas Smythe, a political economist of communication and media, his analysis of audience labor and the audience commodity. And the picture on the down right here, that's a young Raymond Williams. I find his his approach of cultural materialism quite important. How to use critical theory for understanding social media. I thought I'd take an example that is not in the book, because Edward Snowden's revelations about internet surveillance and so on were made in June last year. This submitted the manuscript for this book in April, and nobody knew really what is happening. Yeah? But as you know, what he unveiled really is the existence of a global internet surveillance system, or several programs like PRISM, XKeyscore, and so on. And these dimensions of critical theory, how can they help us to understand such a phenomenon like this global internet surveillance system? First, capitalism. Capitalism is all about the logic of the commodity. And there are companies involved here who collaborate with secret services. What do companies do? They accumulate capital. For doing so, they sell commodities. There can be different forms of commodities and different strategies for capital accumulation. In the realm of the media or the internet, you can commodify user data, you can commodify the access to a platform, you can commodify content or also software, yeah, when you buy a license and so on, or you can commodify hardware. And these companies involved, like AOL, Apple, Facebook, and so on, have different commodification strategies. Although if we look at social media, then the most important commodification strategy is the commodification of user data and the use of targeted advertising as a business model. So I think that's a dimension that is very important for a critical theory, or that's the political economic dimension, really. Then power. I think what Snowden's revelations show us is a kind of existence of a kind of surveillance industrial complex. And of course, C. Wright Mills, in his political theory, talked about the existence of a power elite where military, economic, and political power interlock. So it's a kind of interlocking power structure that he describes. And I think that's exactly what is happening also in the realm of surveillance today, because there's a surveillance industry, there are company interests involved there, and there are secret services involved. And some people have used for this complex the term surveillance industrial complex, which is a kind of further development of the military industrial complex. But I think what is happening in this surveillance industrial complex in relationship to the internet is that we as users, we use social media, we generate a lot of data. We keep parts of this data private, partly we make it very public, partly we make it semi-public. What happens next is the commercial platforms like Facebook, Twitter, Weibo, and so on. Then this data is turned into a private property that is sold to advertisers. So that's a kind of commodification that comes in here, or an economic control. And what happens then to the data is that also, as Snowden was revealing, that secret services like the NSA, GCHQ, and other ones get access to this data. There's more to this because this access of state institutions, of secret services to the data is also outsourced to private security companies who make a profit out of organizing the monitoring of citizens and users. So Edward Snowden worked for Booz Allen Hamilton, which is one of more than 2,000 private security companies working for the NSA in order to conduct this monitoring. And it's a very profitable company. Last year their profits were like $232 million US dollars. So surveillance is not just a threat to privacy. What we should also bear in mind is that it's a really big business. Next, ideology. So, critical theory is also a critique of ideology. And I think in respect to surveillance, especially in the United Kingdom and the US, there are a lot of ideologies around. It's kind of idea that if you've got nothing to hide, then you've got nothing to fear, or that for security, we need to compromise some privacy, that more surveillance will stop crime and terrorism. After 9/11, all of this has intensified, really. Well, Obama says you can't have security, really, if you have full privacy, so let's downsize privacy rights. In the discussions this summer, when this emergency law was passed through the British Parliament on data retention and investigative powers, Theresa May was saying, we need these capabilities, more surveillance capabilities, otherwise we run the risk that murderers will not be caught, terrorists will be undetected, drug traffickers will be unchallenged, child abusers will not be stopped, and so on. So that's how ideology exactly works. But why is it ideology? Ideology is a false claim about reality. Terrorists are not so stupid to communicate online what they are really doing. It's very unlikely that you catch a lot of terrorists by monitoring the internet. Also, there's no technological fix to political and socio-economic complex societal problems. If we go into fostering ever more surveillance potentials, my fear is really that thereby we also advance fascist and totalitarian potentials in society. Yeah, that's why I'm very critical. Law and order politics, it's also always a kind of far-right strategy. Also, just from a legal perspective, the presumption of innocence is turned into a presumption of guilt. It's not you're innocent until you're proven guilty, or that it's proven that you're a terrorist. Now, the more standard assumption of state institutions is, well, we are suspicious of you, you're a terrorist until you're proven innocent. Yeah? So it's exactly turning around the logic. And what we should also bear in mind, Stuart Hall died earlier this year. I think his greatest book that is very relevant for understanding what is happening today in society and politics is his book Policing the Crisis, where in a situation of crisis in the mid-70s, he described media discourses. Something very similar is happening today. We're in a situation of deep crisis, and there's heavily ideological scapegoating going on. And the surveillance ideology is just one of these ideologies. But there are other contemporary scapegoats, also especially in Britain, like Romanian and Bulgarian workers and immigrants, the European Union, benefits recipients, the unemployed, the poor, international students, immigrants, Muslims. So there's always there's a kind of discourse of danger around, yeah, that all of these groups pose certain dangers for us. At the same time, we are in a living in a society with increasing inequalities. Yeah? If you look at Thomas Piketty's book, Capital in the 21st Century, he shows exactly this, the increasing and exploding inequalities, really. So these kind of ideologies also deflect attention from the social problems underlying contemporary society. If you look at the, I mean, that's a good example now at the moment, if you look at the protests in Hong Kong and how it's being framed, I have not read a single good article in any British newspaper. Everything The Guardian writes about it is really crap, really, yeah, and BBC, it's simplistic. It's things like this, yeah, Hong Kong protests, yet another social media revolution after the social media revolution in Iran, 2009, 2011 in Egypt, and so on. It's a very simplistic picture, really. Yeah? It's very difficult to get really an insight of what is happening really there and what's really the role of social media. I'm not saying they play no role, but it's definitely, I mean, the protest there is definitely not something created by social media. And this kind of journalism creates this kind of impression. That's quality journalism. Alternatives, critical theory is really concerned about alternatives. But Jürgen Habermas, he does not use social media, although there is a fake Jürgen Habermas on Twitter, whom you can follow. But why I think Habermas is interesting, because what he pointed out in his book, The Structural Transformation of the Public Sphere, is that that in contemporary modern society, both political power structures and economic power structures limit communicative action and the public sphere. And if you come, if you look at the surveillance industrial complex and what Snowden's revelations, then it's exactly economic control, a kind of economic colonization of the internet, and political control by state institutions on the other hand. So what Habermas calls the colonization of the life world is exactly happening there. But at the same time, of course, Habermas has a vision of a public sphere it's an idea. It's not a kind of a reality, or only partly a reality, which could guide us in thinking about what could be alternatives. Because what is clear is we could continue with the social media and the internet the way it is now, highly politically and economically controlled internet and social media world. But I think that's not the best possible internet, and there are a lot of dangers involved here. Nowadays, the main reaction is really to the problems we are facing is more surveillance, yeah, like the Data Retention and Investigative Powers Act, all right, so on, that extends, for example, the definition of telecommunication services from phone and internet providers to all sorts of social media and web platforms, so that also these providers legally can be enforced to retain connection data and to intercept data based on a warrant. It's also extraterritorial legislation that goes beyond the UK. There are very few critical voices really on this. I mean, there are some privacy groups like Liberty and so on have been doing very in-depth analysis, but these things happen so fast, it's very difficult to react. Yeah, and there are these surveillance ideologies around. It's also something that we don't, it's a kind of threat that we don't fear. Yeah? It's not like somebody wanting to hit you with a hammer, yeah? Because surveillance is invisible. So really the public discourse about this is really very limited. Yeah. But how to react to it? I mean, those people who are concerned, I would say there are basically three strategies. On the one hand, and I've just conducted for a European Union project interviews with computer scientists, because they know a lot about privacy so on, and ask them what kind of political strategies do they consider appropriate. And they all think something must be done, we can't continue like this, but they do not have a clear opinion on what kind of strategies. But I think the first common reaction is sometimes that you hear technology might not just be a problem, it could also be part of the solution. It's all about privacy-enhancing technologies, anonymizing your browsing, email encryption, and so on. Then the question is, can the law be a protection? Yeah? Can there be some safeguards for citizens, users, and consumers with the help of the law, more transparency, so on, how to reform laws? I mean, the thing is also there are social media platforms, and the internet is global. the law tends to be national and regional, European Union and so on. And then there are groups like Anonymous, there are civil society groups that are more like taking a protest and civil society strategy. Yeah? And the question, I mean, the general question that I just want to open us is how to respond to these things. What I just find striking is really the lack of public discourse and the lack of response. Yeah? And then there are also alternative social media platforms already around that are not that much controlled by the state and that are based on different economic principles. Yeah? And this book about the Occupy movement that I did, also I analyzed there how the Occupy activists think about alternative platforms. And in principle, they think that's a good idea, but the problem is how do you resource alternative platforms? These days, there's a lot of talk about a new social media platform called Elo. That's not an alternative. It's yet another capitalist social media platform that does not commodify user data, but it commodifies the access to special services that you can buy from them. Yeah? Whereas things like Diaspora, Crabgrass, or N-1, these are alternative platforms, but nobody is using them because there's a monopoly of the existing platforms. They don't have resources, personnel working for them, and so on, because they don't want to make a profit. Therefore, I think we need also media reforms. I think we should develop the license fee that we have in Britain into a media fee that is not just paid by households, but it is also paid by companies that is not a flat fee, but a progressive fee, so that those with low incomes pay nothing. Why does one who earns £1 million a year pay the same license fee as a poor unemployed person? Yeah? It's not fair, really. Also, companies could pay this kind of fee. And then we could turn this, the state needs more money, that's without a doubt. Yeah? The Tories are lying when they are saying we can reduce taxes, actually. We need more tax income, really, that's clear. But if we would get more tax income, why are such a tax? Of course, the BBC still needs to be funded and should not be downgraded in any sense. But if there's additional...
Can I get you to wind up now?
Yes. Half a minute. If we could take this money, additional money, and via participatory budgeting, give it to the citizens as a kind of public sphere check. Everyone gets £100-150 per year. There are two conditions. You get this money from the state. You must spend it. You cannot spend it on beer or buying a car or buying my book and so on. But you must donate it to a non-profit media organization run by a civil society organization, which then would mean that the alternative platforms that are under-resourced and based on precarious labor now would get a resource base. Well, that's a kind of political idea. But overall, my concern is that we have the thing that we have here on the left, a world of computers and the internet that is economically and politically controlled. And what I would like to see is what we need or what we need to discuss more is how do we get away from this world and get into a different media world where we have commons-based media and commons-based social media in a commons-based society. I'll stop here.
Oh, Christian.